Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Beat me up on the mamas of all mama shit.
Hey, I'm looking through my telescope and I see a mothership. Is that you? Beam me up.
Hey, D.A., I'm thirsty, man. Could you beam me up for a cold one?
Hey, D.A., what's going on, baby? Stop me off and beam me up.
D.A., what's the dealio? Permission to get in that mothership.
Is my window seat still available? Beam me up.
What's going on, D.A.? Hey, man, I need you to do me a huge favor. My coworker's a jerk. Oh, just beam me up, man.
Get beamed up. Everyone else has. It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
And we come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. These are challenging times. Rocket Mortgage is prepared to help. If you need mortgage assistance, contact their team 24/7. RocketMortgage.com. Their home to yours. The team at Rocket Mortgage is with you. Thanks for being with us, everybody. The DA show on a Target Demo Friday. We want to know where you're at, how you're listening, and what you're up to this weekend, including what you're cooking. Tweet at me when you see the Target Demo meme or on Facebook. On Twitter, it's DA on CBS. And on Facebook, it's facebook.com/TheDAShow. Coming up in 20 minutes, Molly Arbogast, who's the CEO of POV Sports Marketing, she's going to join us and drop by to discuss exactly how you promote sports in a time when there is no sports and what a return of sports will mean business-wise coming up later on this summer. We've already seen NASCAR come back successfully, ratings way up on last Sunday's race in Darlington. NASCAR's best number for a non-Daytona race in 5 years. For Bundesliga, week one last week, FS1's ratings up 700% compared to previous broadcasts before the pandemic. People want sports, are desperate to spend time watching sports, and we'll spend money around sports. We'll talk about the business of that coming up here with Molly Arbogast coming up in about 20 minutes from now. In 40 minutes, we've got your best audio of the day. Next hour, Amanda Baliones, who is a reporter for Turner's The Match, Champions for Charity. Amanda, golf reporter, going to join us coming up here on the show in about an hour. And then in the final hour of the show, Matt Kenseth, NASCAR's number 42, and Felix Wright, safety on the 88 Browns, as we reset best team ever after yesterday. Felix will join us coming up here today instead. But a follow-up to the Josh Rosen story. So Mike Giardi, NFL Network, reported yesterday that teams have reached out to the Dolphins about Josh Rosen, but the Dolphins are interested in keeping him right now. I was high on Rosen coming out of UCLA. I was high on Rosen in Arizona. I thought he got a short end of the stick on a bad team with a dead duck head coach, and that a restart, a refresh would be good for him, and that he was not yet damaged goods. And then he gets to Miami and they spin the wheel of Josh Rosen and they don't like what they see and they go back to Ryan Fitzpatrick. There's two parts of this here. Number one, I have to admit, when a second team seemingly gives up on you, they've gone back to Fitzpatrick. Fitzpatrick will be the starter, we presume, when the season opens up. They drafted Tua Tagovailoa. When a second team bails on you, I've got to take a step back and own this. It is distinctly possible I was wrong and Rosen does not have the goods to play quarterback in the NFL. Look, that is 1/16th of the NFL that has passed on you when you're 23 years old. Okay? But number two, I do think there may have been extenuating circumstances last year with the Dolphins. The first part of that is Brian Flores as the head coach did not want to eat a bunch of losses. You know how Jameis wants to eat a bunch of W's? I just don't think Brian Flores ever had the appetite, ever had the stomach to endure supposed losing, assumed losing, planned losing. The Dolphins front office traded away most of his good players before the season and during the season. Minkah Fitzpatrick, on and on and on it goes. Laramie Tunsil, the deal with the Texans. I mean, everybody that was anything on that team basically got traded away, and they got boat raised the first month of the season. And then Brian Flores, because he's a proud man and he's a good coach, and he came from the Patriots where you don't just accept losing, said, screw this. We're going to try to win football games here. We are not just going to punt on the season. And I think he saw, instead of developing Josh Rosen, let's get some W's. Let's build a culture here. And that guy found 5 wins last year on a team that was trying to lose. That guy found 5 wins, including week 17, going to Foxborough and getting a W that knocked the Patriots out of a bye. It is one of the great single-season coaching jobs, in my estimation, of the decade, of the last 10 years. And that's because that team had nothing to play for. They stripped it down to the nuts and bolts to get draft picks, and he still found a way to climb to 5 wins. That was really impressive. If I'm not mistaken, the Dolphins went 4-4 in their last 8, if I remember correctly. So he didn't want to just stack losses. He'd rather go to the veteran quarterback. And I wonder if his patience was all the way for Rosen's mistakes, where it might have benefited Rosen's career, but Flores wanted to win football games. Number two, they had an offensive coordinator last year that was brought in from the Patriots. Flores was, of course, a former Pat assistant as well, Chad O'Shea, who had worked with the Patriots wide receivers for a decade. He came in, and I think he wanted to install a complex Patriots-esque timing offense. And now we hear, after Chad O'Shea was fired after 1 season, a day after the year ended, Flores got rid of a guy that he had worked with for years, okay? He had brought a guy from New England to coach his offense, to call his offense, and within a day fired him. Now we're hearing some anonymous Dolphins players saying it was too complex for a young team. We weren't ready for that. And I wonder if maybe Josh Rosen was in a two-part difficult situation where they don't really have the patience to go through his ups and downs, and they have an offense where he needs it stripped down a little simplified, and the entire team did, and Flores realized that. So it makes me wonder that maybe we don't throw the baby out with the bathwater just yet on Rosen. That's what other teams are seeing, that he's got ability, he's got talent, and that maybe he's been in 2 bad situations. I think also that Flores doesn't love Josh Rosen's lack of tenacity. I think that he probably looks at Josh Rosen not as enough of a fighter, not as enough of a leader, not enough of a competitor, and needs a guy that has a certain toughness, and Rosen might just not have that. So I think there's an element here where Flores just doesn't really like Rosen as much as he thinks he needs in a quarterback anyway. But there is a reason the teams are reaching out for Josh Rosen, and that's because the book is not quite written on him yet. Now, it's closing. I mean, the books, if you get to a third team and you flame out there, I don't know how much more hope anybody can have. But teams reaching out about Rosen, I think, suggest that there's something left in the tank. It's not over. But I would say the Dolphins saying thanks but no thanks offers right now must be because they're selling low. I mean, there's no value right now to trading Rosen, because what would you get back? You've already traded away a second rounder to get him. What would you get back? Mraz, do you think that teams reaching out about Josh Rosen suggest that maybe he still has an NFL career left in him?
Yes, it's just interesting to see. I would love to know the actual teams. I mean, the Patriots are the obvious one because You can't tell me that Josh Rosen's upside, at least at one point, isn't higher than Jarrett Stidham's. Other than that, though, Josh Rosen, to me, I mean, is the perfect guy to take on if you feel you have the coaching to kind of build. And if he's behind a quarterback for 1 or 2 years that maybe you're not fully committed to long term, and the Dolphins just kind of wasted away and they just drafted Tua, he's a guy to bring into your system. And if he fails, he fails. But at the same time, maybe somebody you bring along, and now you found a diamond in a rough quarterback that needed a couple extra years seasoning. Because, again, I'll say this. We love Josh Rosen. We thought he was the best quarterback in that draft that now looks pretty stacked. Josh Allen, Sam Darnold, Lamar Jackson, Baker Mayfield. We know the names. But, I mean, D.A., if he went into a really bad rookie situation with Steve Wilks, he gets fired after 1 year. He then gets put in this unprecedented situation where a Cliff Kingsbury's hired and he wants to draft his own quarterback. That's never happened before in the NFL. I don't know how much of that's on Rosen. Then he gets to Miami, and if the reports are true now about O'Shea and how complex his playbook was, and the Dolphins really never had their heart fully in Rosen anyway with their eyes on Tua, this guy has had two of the worst breaks along the way. Now, he could have made both of those teams and rose above. Yeah, I guess, but maybe that's not the kind of guy he was or is. I am not ready to write off Josh Rosen. I am excited to see teams are asking about him, and I think he can absolutely still have an NFL career if these reports are true.
You're still excited about Josh Rosen?
I mean, excited maybe is a reach. Like, I'm not excited the way I would be if I was rubbed down with Old Bay excited, but but maybe intrigued, because I think, to me, Josh Rosen has gotten a raw deal more than Josh Rosen has failed over his first 2 years of his career. I think it's very easy to dump on Josh Rosen and go, oh, you were drafted top 10, and look, here you are, you're going to be on your third team in 3 years, let's say. I don't think that's all on Rosen. I just don't. I would have preferred the Dolphins maybe not have been the team that traded for him if their heart wasn't going to be fully invested in this, and if this is true about the playbook, but that situation has never happened before in the NFL where a team takes a guy, fires their coach, new coach wants to take his own guy, and just like that, you're taking quarterbacks in the top 10 in back-to-back years. That's never happened before. That's not on Josh Rosen. So from that standpoint, this guy needs some great coaching now. He needs a little belief, a little confidence installed more than he needs hard love. And I think with those things, I don't think the tools and talent that we saw of Josh Rosen just 2 years ago coming out have suddenly eroded. So, yeah, I'm intrigued, maybe semi-excited. I think Rosen still has a place in this league.
What an interesting fit it would be if the Patriots were reaching out about Josh Rosen to try to reclaim his career. Of course, the Patriots have been left with a significant void because Tom Brady went to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Now Tampa Bay, and in Tampa Bay, he's seemingly doing anything and everything to have his name out there. Yesterday we learn, that Tom Brady's going to release a 9-part documentary next year, 2021. And I just don't understand this. And I want this on record. I'm not rooting against Tom Brady. I think a lot of people think that I hate the Patriots so much that I am rooting against Tom Brady. I am not. Whatever he achieves in Tampa Bay is a phenomenal sports story. Really phenomenal. And I'm here for it. You know, throughout my life and even before I became a football fan, the storyline of the aging quarterbacks going somewhere else has been ugly. Johnny Unitas with the Chargers, Joe Namath with the Rams, non-quarterback Emmitt Smith with the Arizona Cardinals. These are awkward endings to Hall of Fame careers. Now, Brett Favre did it best getting to an NFC Championship game with the Minnesota Vikings, but even that was not all peaches and cream when he left the Green Bay Packers. So we don't oftentimes see this work out well. Peyton Manning did go to 2 Super Bowls with the Denver Broncos, but he wasn't 43 years old like Tom Brady is. So I am here for whatever Brady is able to achieve. I think it's a phenomenal sports story. And look, the Buccaneers have been also-rans and irrelevant and terrible for a long time. So them getting some spice and getting some attention and giving their fans a jolt is really cool to me. What I am annoyed by right now is, why can't Tom Brady wait until, you know, he's retired to want to release a 9-part documentary? Why wouldn't we wait until the story is over? And even if you say to me right now, well, DA, maybe it seems like he's going to play 1 year in Tampa and he knows next year he's not going to be playing. Wouldn't you want the actual retirement ceremony to happen or the actual announcement to happen before you start piecing together the legacy of Tom Brady in a 9-part series over a documentary? I don't understand jumping the gun here by Tom, except for the fact that he is trying to strike, I guess, while the iron is hot and he's relevant, and he is worried that the moment that he retires, he is irrelevant and nobody cares anymore, which I don't think is true. But Brady right now has become really obnoxious with how much attention he wants on every part of his life. I mean, everything now for Brady is about garnering attention, and this is a weird pivot because I guess he was just jammed up for so long in New England that he felt he couldn't be himself. But now, I mean, again, it is like the middle-aged man that was married to his high school sweetheart for 25 years, finally gets a divorce, and now is on every dating app, is on Tinder, got the fake hair piece, got the convertible, and is just raging every night in a Hawaiian shirt on South Beach. And you're like, dude, what are you doing, man? You're like 50 years old. I don't understand, Mraz, why Tom Brady, who is freaking Tom Brady, is so enamored with attention on everything right now. Why can't he take a breather and let this documentary happen, I don't know, 2 years from now, 4 years from now, 5 years from now?
Yeah, even 2, 4, or 5 years from now is too soon. Tom Brady, I'm assuming, watched The Last Dance because everybody watched The Last Dance and Tom Brady's a competitor, and I don't think he agrees to this documentary without seeing The Last Dance thing. Wouldn't The Last Dance reassure Tom Brady that, you know what, if this comes out 10, 15, 20 years from now, that people are going to be really into your career again? Because here's the bit. If you make this now, and it's a 9-parter now, well, who the heck cares about a 9, 10-parter about Tom Brady 15, 20 years from now? I mean, you've already made it. This isn't the Taken of Pelham 1, 2, 3, where you could just keep remaking models every 10 years of it. It doesn't make any sense. And the beauty of the Michael Jordan documentary was the nostalgia the end of the 90s are in, looking back, reassuring ourselves. Yeah, right now when you hear Tom Brady's making a 9-part doc because we all just got done watching a 10-part doc, it sounds like, oh, okay, yeah, more content, more TV. But in reality, what the heck do I need the story of Tom Brady over 9 episodes? I'm still in the process of watching it.
Exactly. I'm watching Tom Brady on Sundays. Right. Why do I need to relive Tom Brady right now?
It doesn't make any sense. Tom Brady's got to let this thing breathe. Go away for a little bit. Now, he's not retired yet, but once you retire, just go away for a little bit. Make us long for you. Make us forget you, because even your haters then, when something like this comes out, will reminisce and go, damn, Tom Brady was really good. I don't think you're going to watch this documentary next year and go, wow, Tom Brady was really good. Wow, this is special. This is intriguing. I think you're going to look at it and go, ugh, again with Tom Brady? And that's not the reaction Brady should be looking for here. Except if you're a Patriot fan and you're fawning over it, going, oh, give me my Tom Brady. Smartpock.
But I got to tell you, I think that Patriots fans are fed up right now because Brady is all up in everybody's face that I don't think they're going to miss him in 1 year from now so much that they want to invest in a 9-part documentary. Like you said, let it breathe. Go away so that we miss you. You know, if you keep calling us, it's really hard to be like, yeah, I can't wait to talk to Tom Brady. You're calling me every single day. I don't want to talk to you. Go away for a little bit. Make me miss you.
DA show history, DA, it's like Peter Schwartz, right? Peter Schwartz never went away after he left the show, and we don't miss him. We end up crushing him after. If we never heard from Schwartz and stuff on social media the last 5 years, I bet you right now we'd be going, I kind of miss Schwartz on an update, but he never went away, and therefore we never longed.
You know, it's a fair comp, and I think we now have a Schwartz corollary for every story we've ever done on this show. It always comes back to Pete. When we come back on the show, what does the business of sports look like upon the return of all of these leagues? Molly Arbogast, CEO, POV Sports Marketing, coming up here next. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Grab a surge protector. You're about to be zapped.
DA, what's up, brother? How you feeling? I love listening to your show, man. I listen to you every day. I can't wait for it, and I hate when it ends. Your gimmicks are the best gimmicks. Want to say I appreciate you guys, and have a good day.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Well, that's nice. The gimmicks are going to really be thankful that you said that. Welcome back. Our toll-free line is sponsored by Geico today. Geico has introduced the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies. For current to new customers that last your full policy term, visit geico.com/giveback for info and eligibility. Thanks so much for being with us, everybody. The DA Show is heard coast to coast with the most on affiliates on the nationally syndicated CBS Sports Radio Network, also on Sirius XM Channel 206. And check us out on your smart device. Stream us, use the CBS Sports app, the radio.com app, or Apple Music. Boy, the business of sports. What has happened? The bottom dropped out with the pandemic because there is no sports. And of course, the economy right now is preventing a lot of growth in that area as well. So what type of challenges are there? But what type of rebound can there be as well as NASCAR, Bundesliga, and other sports come back? Molly Arbogast has worked in the business department of the Philadelphia Eagles. She has also worked in the business department of a number of marketing areas, including POV Sports Marketing, where she is right now as the president and CEO. And she joins us here on the show. Molly, good morning.
Good morning, DA. Nothing like a little bit of sponsorship conversation to put all your listeners to sleep at 7:24 in Philadelphia. And
well, let's try to spice this sponsorship conversation up.
Your topics are far more interesting in general, but for the marketers who listen in, I think they'll be intrigued, but happy to share a little bit of perspective on what brands are thinking about right now.
Well, I do think it's interesting from a viewer perspective here, and this is not boring. It's that we are getting ready to watch sports return. We have seen some sports return like NASCAR and like German soccer. And so I think the viewing experience is so different without fans in the stands. And the business of not having fans in the stands extends to how these leagues are going to play out. How are leagues right now trying to save some sponsorship money if they don't have daily gate revenue with attendance?
Well, I think that's one of the biggest challenges that all the leagues are going to face. I know that in speaking with a lot of insiders at different leagues, you know, the start dates of the return, not necessarily the finishing up of the 1920 season, because I think we all understand that there is no, there are going to be no fans in the stands when the NHL, the NBA finish up their seasons and MLS and whatnot. They're not going to be able to play with fans. I think in the fall, the big question is when are the start dates? Because so many of these leagues, their business model relies on tickets. And, you know, the NBA, I believe it's something like 40% of the revenue comes from premium seating and general tickets, you know, general season ticket members and individual game tickets. So I think that that's going to be revenue that is going to be impossible to make up, quite frankly. We're not able to, you know, stop time and allow a vaccine to be developed so that we can all go back and sit in a building with 20,000 fans. I think that what you're going to end up seeing in the fall is a lot of, obviously, a test-and-learn approach. I think that NASCAR has led the way on this. I've never been so excited to watch NASCAR in my life because it was sports. And I think the fans across the country are starving to have that fan experience. They're just going to have to consume it a little differently. And I think that teams are going to have to get a little bit more creative with sponsorship engagement and what they're bringing to sponsors to connect those sponsors to the fans just in a different way. But I think we all need to keep in mind this is going to pass. It's just going to be a painful 18 to 24 months as we come out of this.
One interesting idea that I've heard floated is that with no fans of the stands, we might see huge advertisements on tarps covering the empty stands. Is that going to be something that we see when baseball comes back or some of these other sports with big stands that are empty?
I think that they almost have to. I think there's obviously not a desire to, quite frankly, junk up the broadcast with a lot of sports. I think the NFL is looking at options. The MLB is looking at options. Certainly have heard some options come out of the NBA. I think it's going to be a matter of making sure that the broadcast experience is still strong, whether you're streaming or watching on, you know, traditional sports media. And I think that there's a fine line there because the more advertising you put on screen, the more that you reduce the share of voice of those who've already bought the advertising as part of courtside signage or behind home plate or whatever it might be. And so I think that there's a tipping point of too much, and it'll be interesting to see how they come out. I've also heard about, you know, virtual fans being kind of placed in the stands. I think the broadcasters are smart. They're gonna look at their camera angles and shoot things tighter to keep the focus on the action. You know, the reason the broad camera angles have been out there is to show the in-ballpark or in-arena experience is awesome. You need to come experience a game in person. When you take away that variable, they'll be able to shoot it potentially tighter and just create a better made-for-television broadcast without incorporating the in-arena or in-stadium fan experience.
Molly Arbogast, CEO, President, POV Sports Marketing, on the business of the return of sports. You know, you mentioned the lack of the luxury suite holder revenue that these leagues usually rely on. Is there also a concern that the people that can afford that much money, and it's wrapped up in corporate money, to go to games just aren't going to be inclined to want to go to games because there could be a danger involved? And so that there's going to be a real slow burn in trying to get that type of money back, maybe even years in the future?
Well, I think with premium seating, you're normally looking at multi-year contracts. I think this is a very difficult year to discuss renewals. I would not want to be in a premium department in any of the leagues at this time talking about a suite renewal, because suites and club seats tend to be long-term contracts. I think that you have to remember the driver behind this is fandom. And fandom has not changed. And I think as long as venues put in a lot of different health precautionary measures, and they're all going to be working with both league leadership on health department guidelines, CDC guidelines, ensuring that there's going to be a safe environment, I actually think the premium, the suite experience, is going to be, if I was a corporation owning a suite, one of the better, safer experiences, because I'm able to limit the number of people in my suite. Am I going to maybe pack 20 people in an NFL suite? I might say, let's not give out that many tickets until game four. Let's kind of check and see. We want to make sure people feel safe coming into the environment. But I think that, you know, America's opening up right now. We're obviously very cautious to make sure that we don't do it too quickly. But I think we also have to be prepared in the fall for potentially a snap that we all of a sudden see cases rising in certain markets. And those venues are going to be reacting from a safety standpoint. And if venues and leagues don't think it's safe, they're going to close the building to fans. There's just no question, and that'll include premium seat holders.
Have you heard or been privy to any conversations about what the requirements will be for fans to be in the building if and when that happens? In other words, is there going to be temperature checks when you go in? Will you have to have immunity? Will you have to be able to prove immunity? Will you have to have only, you know, one every 6 feet, or checkerboard attendance in seats or something like that?
I think I have heard from different league insiders that you have a lot of different scenarios being played out. I think one of the challenges is envisioning 30,000 fans in an NFL stadium and having them sit every other row and then not having fans get up and move to the 50.
Yeah.
I think then it becomes a guest services issue, because you know, spacing people out based on how many tickets they own and whatnot, that's a real challenge. I think that if you're going to, you know, obviously temperature checks, I think, are going to be a must. I know that there's certain technologies being looked at the entry points to be able to not necessarily have to do it individually, but be able to do the crowd scanning the way they do at an airport. And I think that there are, you know, they're going to be more and more, we'll call them health innovations around venues in the next several months, to be able to almost apply, you know, airplane sanitizing equipment to seating between games. And I think we're going to see a lot of innovation. Teams are already adding or interviewing to add, you know, their director of fan health, you know, so that they have a fan experience where they're able to help make sure that the environment is safe. They're all going to be working with health departments locally, because this isn't, you know, a blanket approach. Every market's a little bit different, but I think you're going to see a lot of PPE. I think there's already been big conference calls with multiple leagues about going cashless in venues, so you're not passing a lot of cash around. Philadelphia, as an example, is an interesting market in that it's against the law in Philadelphia to have a cashless venue because of people that are underbanked, you know. But there's obviously reverse ATMs they're looking at, to be able to have people feed cash into an ATM, get a card back. So there are all these different options being discussed. And I think that the 2020 fall season for all sports is going to look very different. And I don't think we're back to normal, air quotes, until 2022.
2022. So you think that next calendar year, 2021, is going to be still an in-between experience, even if we do have a vaccine, where it's not going to be quite back to normal, but maybe 2022 is when things feel back to normal?
I think so. I mean, I don't want to be doom and gloom, but I think that the key in the business world is a lot of sports world right now is a lot of contingency planning. And I think we have to plan for that type of a scenario. You know, my agency, we buy partnerships for brands, and our job is to look at both sides of the coin to say, you know, are we going to have fans and stands? And is the vaccine going to be, it's not about just, developing the vaccine. It's about making sure that it's widely available. That takes time. And while we would, I think, all love to snap our fingers and say we're going to have a vaccine in February, that just means we have it. Now we have to give it to 350 million people in the country, and that will take time. And so I think leagues don't want to be the source of an outbreak, and leagues want to make sure they're protecting their fans. And with radio broadcast, television, digital and social where it is, and the ability to engage with fans, they want to make sure that they connect fans to that tremendous experience that they love and can do it in a safe way. But I think we have to be realistic that next summer, going into the fall, could be, you know, not exactly like it is today, where many states are still in lockdown, but it's going to be different. And then we'll be back to normal after the vaccine's widely available to everybody.
So one final question about quote-unquote normalcy. When I'm watching The Last Dance and the Michael Jordan documentary from the 90s or any classic basketball game, football game, baseball game, and I see crowds piled on one another and we're all close shoulder to shoulder and people are screaming in each other's face, right now it's jarring to see. And I wonder, is there a concern within sports leagues and sports franchises that even with a vaccine, there's going to be part of the public that never feels comfortable going back to a stadium, back to a crowd like that, and that sports has to change permanently in that way? Is there that discussion?
I don't believe so. I think that, you know, there's nothing like an in-venue experience. And, you know, in the case of, you know, Philadelphia, I was with the Philadelphia Eagles for 10 years out of my career. And there is nothing like going to a Philadelphia Eagles game. But you also have to look at the fact that millions of people were at home watching on broadcast, and that was the way they wanted to enjoy their favorite team. You can't get a ticket in Philadelphia during an Eagles season. It's very difficult. Season tickets are sold out. And it's I don't think you're going to get away from that experience. Fans need to be together. It's part of human nature to want to be able to high-five a total stranger after an amazing play. That will come back. I just think it will be slow to come back. I think there you're going to see the avid fans going to games if venues are open in the fall to partial, even if it's like limited capacity. I think you're going to see them coming back absolutely. You know, here we are. We're sitting here on May 21st or 22nd, rather, and, you know, if I had said to you 3 months ago, you know, given you a crystal ball and said, this is what's going to happen in America, you would have said I was nuts. I think in 3 months, we're going to know a lot more, and venues are going to be able to create safe experiences. They're just going to look a little different. There may be, again, a lot of PPE. Fans will come back. Fandom does not change, and fans will be back in the stands when the leagues allow them to come back. I really, truly believe that.
Molly Arbogast has worked in the front office with the business development and other business opportunities with the Philadelphia Eagles, with the WNBA. She's currently president and CEO of POV Sports Marketing. Molly, you undersold yourself before we began this interview. You thought it was going to be boring. This was fantastic. This really was fantastic. I'm going to guess that most of our listeners said that's one of the best interviews we've had all week. This was awesome. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me. Have a great day. Happy Memorial Day weekend.
You too. Molly Arbogast joining us here on the show. That was wildly informative and one of the rare people that actually have a connection to the inside conversation, the business insiders, the franchise insiders, the league higher-ups, the television higher-ups. Hey, this is how it's going to work, and that's really fascinating. That kind of felt like getting the secrets from behind the vault. That was phenomenal. Great stuff from Molly. And look, I mean, the one thing that catches you there is Molly saying that things probably don't go back to normal until 2022, so that all of 2021 is in some way, shape, or form abnormal. But with that, her belief is that when there is a vaccine, life does go back to normal, that this is not a permanent status, that people want to congregate, they want to go to games, they want to cheer, they want to, quote, high-five a stranger, like she just said. Really, really interesting stuff. I love that interview. Great. Andrew Bogish is standing by. He has our headlines this morning. Mr. Bogues, good morning.
DA, good morning. So maybe the same guy that told our Moose the Browns might trade Odell Beckham Jr. told Chris Sims that Dak Prescott wanted $45 million for the fifth and final year of a new deal in Dallas. Both sides have dismissed that story. ESPN says their main issue remains length of deal. Dak wants four seasons. The Cowboys want five. So there is one line of thinking that if Dak did give the Cowboys an astronomical number for year five, it's because he knew, or his agents knew, they would say no to it and somehow get them back to the four-year deal that he wants. The bottom line is there's been no real progress on either side of getting something done as the regular season fast approaches. The Jets, meanwhile, and All-Pro safety Jamal Adams now at an impasse in extension talks. That, according to multiple outlets, their issue appears to be timing. Adams wants to get something done before the new season. The team is in no rush, partly because Adams is signed for this year, and then Gangrene could use the franchise tag on him. And teams now have the official list of rule changes they'll vote on next week. We could end up with some form of a sky judge, someone watching multiple video feeds that could make calls on his or her own or confer with the on-field officials. There's also the onside kick alternative of a 4th and 15 from your own.
Let me just stop you there. Boy, Mirage, that sounds a whole lot like an original spring football league that we all enjoyed here on the show, huh?
Yeah, boy, I thought the Alliance of American Football could bring no innovation to the NFL. Interesting. Remember when the XFL also parachuted in with the same play and everybody said, wow, look at this onside kick rule the XFL has. Oh, really? Were you not watching the AAF? And I bet you the AAF gets zero credit when this gets approved. Nobody will ever mention that this was an AAF innovation.
Sky Judge and the onside kick rule are both going to end up being eventual NFL changes. I am committed to that. I believe that. It might not be immediately. At some point in time, Sky Judge and 4th and 15 being the onside kick instead, the alternative, is going to happen in the NFL. And both of those things were first executed by the Alliance. R.I.P. AAF it.
And Sean, I'll give you this. At the very least, one of my sportsmen today will give the Alliance credit for this innovation.
Good.
So you got that at least going for you.
Thank you, buddy.
Carrying the banner.
MLBPA has now given the league its response to owners' return to play plan. Players want more testing than the original, quote, multiple times a week. They also think some of the MLB plan is too stringent, like making them come to the park in full uniform. And the NHLPA Executive Committee is voting on that 2014 conference-based playoff format. The vote would lead to more detailed negotiations with the league. The results of the vote could be known as soon as tonight. Now, to say the least, an emotional win at Darlington yesterday for Xfinity Series driver Chase Briscoe. He won 2 days after he and his wife lost their pregnancy.
And obviously now, I'm super glad I came back and raced, but I don't think there was ever a thought of, you know, not going racing just because, and that's what we do, and that's, you know, the best therapy, at least for me and my family.
Briscoe actually got the news Tuesday, waiting at Darlington for this race to begin, but rain pushed it to yesterday. He said he was crying in the car during the final laps. He beat Kyle Busch by less than a second. Yankees right fielder Aaron Judge still has not swung a bat in his recovery from that cracked rib. But again, Judge apparently is doing well and on schedule, with GM Brian Cashman saying recently they always expect the Judge to be out until, quote, summertime.
What a break Clemson for the Yankees, actually. I mean, yes. if the season was being played, no Aaron Judge. He hadn't swung a bat until Memorial Day, which means that I got to imagine the Yankees don't have any thoughts on him coming back before July, that the Yankees would have played half the season without their best player. That's a huge break for New York.
And DA, they would have been without one of their big four aces, James Paxton, too, who now will be ready to go for the regular season if it gets going. So the Yankees are in good shape here. Let's play some baseball.
You're beaming right now by this.
First of all, the thought of seeing the Yankees play again gets me excited. The second thought of, out of all of the teams in pro sports, the Yankees might have gotten one over on sports being held out, makes me happy as a Yankee fan. Finally, a break goes the Yankee way.
Yeah, finally.
You guys needed it.
100 years. Yeah, finally. You got one break.
Clemson wide receiver Justin Ross is having shoulder surgery early next month for a lingering stinger injury suffered during spring ball. Evaluation and treatment were complicated by the coronavirus shutdown. There's no timetable for Ross's return. And Alabama and Arizona football have scheduled a home-and-home series, but you'll have to wait until 2030. 32-33. The first game will be in Tuscaloosa, and I had to read that sentence about 8 times last night, and it made me unnecessarily angry. You should be planning nothing for 2032-33,
really?
Let alone a football game. I mean, that's a decade. It's more than a decade from now. Get out with this.
If 2020 has taught us anything, it is don't plan too far in advance, because you never know what is going to happen. I mean, by that point in time, there might be a murder hornet under center for Alabama.
I mean, they could be playing in a floating stadium in 2032, and you're not accounting for that now, and this is ridiculous. Leave me alone.
All right, thank you, Bogues. When we come back, we've got your best audio of the day, including Gronk's return on his return to Tampa Bay. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
CBS presents this program in color.
An educated person can't think he's going to get a recruit by strippers coming in.
They can fire you, but they can't eat you.
And they run through our ass like through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
The audio you need to hear. It's DA Soundcheck.
We start with Gronk. This audio courtesy of CBS Sports HQ, as people are a little worried that Gronk, who had been away from football for more than a year wrestling, might be coming in under his playing weight this season.
Since senior year in high school, at the end of senior year, I was 260. I'd never been under 260 since then. So it felt good just to drop that weight, ease up my joints, let my body, free. I kind of felt like that weight was bloated weight, too. So it felt good to get rid of it. And now it's time to build back upon it.
So we'll see what type of size Gronk is in, what type of weight he is at coming back. But we don't really know. Is Gronk's body going to hold up? Is he still going to be as physical as he once was? He spent a year wrestling. He was totally away from football. Can it work? He said he was in massive pain, couldn't sleep, nightmares, depression, all of that. You know, I think that it feels a little now disingenuous, the depths to which he said his pain was, which forced him to retire. Now that he's kind of happy-go-lucky Gronk coming back to play like a Labrador playing with his owner, with Tom Brady. So I'm interested to see if physically and mentally he's able to hold up under this grind, because putting your body back through that after what you said you went through sounds like a nightmare to me. Here is Ryan Fitzpatrick on whether he is going to help out Tua Tagovailoa, who was the number 6 overall pick. This is courtesy of the What's Next podcast with Eric Wood.
For me, I'm his biggest cheerleader right now, but I also want to be out there playing. You know, I also want to be on the field, and that's kind of why I'm still doing it, because I still enjoy playing the game. So hopefully some of the lessons I'm able to teach him are him watching me play. But if it's the other way around, I'm going to do my best to help him succeed in the best way that he can.
Well, that's a pretty cool attitude to have. I mean, Ryan Fitzpatrick seems like a pretty cool dude. We had him on Radio Row at Super Bowl week, and he's got a great sense of humor. He's a wry style of sense of humor. He's a smart guy, a Harvard dude. And, obviously he's had a career that has been ups and downs. At times has been a hero. At times has been a punchline. Fitz tragic. But for Fitzpatrick, he knows he's not the future. He's just the present. So it makes sense to just kind of try to do the best you can on Sundays, but understand that this is not your time, that playing nice with Tua is probably going to be more important to your legacy than maybe anything else. Tonight at 8 Eastern, 5 Pacific, shuffle your plan to relive some of the best moments of the World Series of Poker. The biggest names of the sport go all in for a chance at the bracelet and a whole lot of cash on CBS Sports Network.
CBS Sports Spectacular, yeah!
It's also an Ask the Pros Day. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Guaranteed low prices, excellent customer service at O'Reilly. Better parts, better prices every day. What a Friday we got going on right now. We have got a Target Demo Friday, so we want to know where you're at, how you're listening, and what you're doing or cooking this weekend. So you can simply tweet me that information by going to my Twitter page, DA on CBS. Tweeting at me. Follow me and tweet me there, DA on CBS, or on Facebook, facebook.com/TheDAShow. That's facebook.com/TheDAShow. Coming up next hour, Amanda Baliones, who's a reporter for The Match, Champions for Charity. Cool golf match, which is going to feature some big names and some big winnings. So Amanda's going to join us next hour. And in about an hour from now, we finally get to my best team ever segment. The 1988 Browns affected me more than a team really should when I was 9 years old. We'll talk to the safety on that team, Felix Wright, who led the league in interceptions a year later, coming up an hour from now. But when we come back, MJ's teammates are none too pleased with The Last Dance. Wait till you hear this audio next. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.